The Mutual Broadcasting System presents STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. With today's briefing, here is retired Marine Intelligence Officer, Lieutenant Colonel Hal Kempfer.
Welcome to STRAT, and our Strategic Risk Assessment Talk is going to discuss the overriding problem that has really impacted what we're doing in the Middle East, the conflict with Iran. It has impacted certainly Ukraine and what they're dealing with. It impacts our readiness, preparedness, deterrence posture in the Far East dealing with China. It overrides literally the globe in terms of what we're doing. I'm going to talk about all these missiles and stuff you hear in the news. It's not very well explained. I'm going to talk about what the specific problems are and what we have to do to basically overcome this, or certainly what at least one of our allies has to do to overcome this. All right. Anyway. The backbone of U.S. missile defense deployed around the world, and I'm not talking about fixed installations, I'm not talking about the stuff that's here in the U.S. that's at fixed bases and stuff, but I'm not saying that this isn't part of that, but when you look around the world, when you look at what we're doing in the Middle East, certainly what we're supporting up in Ukraine, and what we have deployed around East Asia, what you see there are these deployable air defense systems. All right. And some of these systems have what I would call a rather interesting history. Certainly the Patriots coming out of the Patriot missiles coming out of Desert Storm didn't perform perfectly. They had room for improvement and there was a little bit of a cloud over them. And if you look at some of the earlier stuff with the THAAD, the Theater High Altitude Air Defense Weapons, if you look at some of the earlier stuff with that, they were having a rather lackluster hit and miss rate. But that has really been addressed over the years. It's a very, certainly with the Patriots, it's a very different missile, different system than what we had, say, 35 years ago. So missile name is still essentially the same, but the system is dramatically improved. And these systems work, and they work so well. That's one of the reasons that we're in a deficit in terms of what this, these are. Now, Ukraine has been using our Patriot system for years. That was a big political decision of the Biden administration to move Patriot missiles over to Ukraine so they can use it for air defense. They've used them with great effect. They've used them with great efficiency. For example, they've realized for quite some time that they don't have a whole lot of Patriot missiles, and that getting Patriot missiles from the U.S. was very difficult. And so when they fire a missile, it's pretty much a one for one. If they see a Russian ballistic missile coming in and they confirm that is a ballistic missile, it is not a decoy. And trust me, that is not an exact science. It's easy. Decoys are made to deceive. So hence they tend to look like a regular missile, but generally speaking, they've been doing about a one-to-one, one Patriot interceptor for every Russian ballistic missile. Now, if you were to go down to the Persian Gulf with the war with Iran, when the Iranians are firing ballistic missiles, they've been the Gulf allies, and I'm not saying we haven't been doing some of this as well, but certainly our Gulf allies have been firing three, four, I've heard up to five Patriot interceptors for one ballistic missile. We've also been firing ballistic missiles against drones. That's been a big discussion. I'll touch on that a little bit more. But when you're using one of these very expensive Patriot missiles to take out a relatively inexpensive drone, that adds up. And the reality is they can keep producing more drones at this, fractional cost. And it'll literally wear us out economically just trying to produce enough Patriot missiles, assuming we're producing enough Patriot missiles. And that's kind of what I'm going to talk about here. All right. The U.S. only produces about 600 of these missiles a year, which when you look at the thousands and thousands of missiles that these things are supposed to intercept, even at a one-to-one rate, you sit there and say, well, how is this sustainable? It's only sustainable during peacetime. Certainly during the war on terror for a couple of decades, you didn't have to worry about Al-Qaeda firing ballistic missiles. You didn't have to worry about the Taliban firing ballistic missiles. So there wasn't all air defense wasn't that big of a deal. There were some air defense issues, all right, that they certainly had to deal with. A lot of it was dealing with very close-in stuff, mortars, smaller tactical rockets, things like that. But that's not something you use a Patriot for. That's something that you use other systems, very close-in systems, to defend against. So hence, for a long time, even though we were in these very expensive, very intense wars. These were, if it makes sense, these were wars that, although intense, they were on the spectrum of what we call low intensity conflict. They weren't major wars where there was a nation state force well equipped like the Russians or like the Iranians that could do stuff like this. And so we just weren't using them. So we're producing 600, which was enough to keep the production lines going. It was enough to keep things happening. But when you go into these big surge cycles, like what has been needed in Ukraine and certainly what's been needed around the Persian Gulf, that's where you can deplete these missiles a lot. And that's what we've been doing. All right. Now there is a plan with approved funding to increase the production rate to about 2,000 missiles a year. That's great. That's, you know, more than tripling the amount of missiles coming out. But that's not supposed to really come online till around 2029. And according to the contract, from what I saw, it's not expected to be really a full going thing. Maybe 2029 will hit the threshold, but I think it gives them till 2032. So we're talking about something that's a good 5-6 years out before it's guaranteed to be fully out there, and at least 3 years out before we might see it happening. So that's a long time to be dealing with this shortfall of missiles. Now, there are a lot of other things happening in this regard. If you look at the missiles, all right, certainly the U.S. produces a lot of missiles, but we've licensed these missiles to places like Germany and Japan. They produce Patriot missiles, but they produce a Patriot missile under license at a much lower volume than what's produced in the U.S. And this is to meet the specific needs that they have in their immediate regions, you know, up in Europe, particularly protecting Germany, looking at German air defense against things like Russia. And then for Japan, they're looking at East Asia. They're looking at the Japanese islands. They're really focused out there on that part of the world. So they're not putting these missiles into the, you know, marketplace, if you will. It's not like these missiles are going to fill the shortfall that we have with our allies or anything in the Persian Gulf. And certainly they're not going to use their missiles to backfill ours. That's never been discussed. That's an interesting idea. But it is a huge problem that's out there. It's international and it's regional, and those missiles are primarily being used at the internal level. Now, as of 2028, THAAD interceptor production was being ramped up. I think they're going to ramp it up to about 96 missiles per year up to maybe 400. That's going to take a while to get to that point. I don't have an exact number of when that's going to happen. Could happen very fast. The money's there. And at those lower volumes, there are certain thresholds that you could meet in terms of production where you can suddenly ramp up a little faster. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that's going to happen a lot faster. Patriot missiles, hopefully we get up to that 2,000 number. But, you know, when you look at Patriot missiles, you know, the PAC-3 interceptors, I think before the war, we were running, before things kicked off in late February with Iran, we're running about 2,200 to about 2,300 plus, and now it is massively depleted. I've heard numbers that we might be up to 827, but I've also heard numbers that we could be down around in the upper 700s, somewhere in that area. But you know, those things can change quickly. All you need is one huge attack to take place, and that could shift the entire dynamic in terms of missiles being used. So the Pentagon's receiving about 15 new Patriot missiles per month. And I think we're getting about 20 THAAD missiles per month. That's one estimate that I saw out there. So that's what's coming in currently. I know this is like, well, this is way too much math, but I'm just saying this is a lot. And the THAAD, I should mention that we were about 452 before the war. I think I've seen numbers that we're down around 250 for THAAD missiles. So it's going to take a while to get back up. And that's something we have to realize. The other thing too is that in the war with Iran, they're firing these Shahed 136 drones. They're launching those suckers toward the Gulf states, aiming at U.S. military bases, a lot of times aiming at infrastructure of our Gulf state allies. Those things cost about $50,000, somewhere in there, $50,000, $60,000 to produce, launch out. I've heard estimates actually lower than that for what it costs to do that. And then we're launching a Patriot missile, which I could, you know, I've heard estimated at $4 million a piece. I think they can get that down to about $2 million a piece, but with larger production. But nonetheless, $50,000 drone with a with a multi-million dollar missile. And pretty soon you realize this is just not an economical situation. And, it's often been discussed, it's like killing a mosquito with an artillery round. Yes, it will work, but it's too much for what's there, and it needs to be a more cost-effective solution for what's happening there. So that's a real problem that we have that we're going to be addressing for quite some time. All right. Now, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman have deals in place to triple Patriot production, quadruple THAAD production. Of course, the THAAD production was so low, quadrupling isn't too hard. But the depletion has really influenced our military decisions. I know the White House puts out that we've had great success with the negotiations, and then the Iranians come out and say, there are no negotiations. We don't know what you're talking about. I'm assuming there probably are some negotiations, whether it's through an interlocutor or maybe direct or maybe through a phone call. I don't know how this is all working. But I will say this, that a big part of the decision making on holding off a recent massive strike, the biggest strike mission that we were supposedly going to do since World War II, that a lot of that had to do with the fact that we were really short of interceptors. Our Gulf allies are short of interceptors, and we were definitely concerned that the Iranian response to that would be to launch a massive onslaught of drones and missiles that would deplete our very limited stockpiles even more. At some point, if they run out, then you have these cities literally lying defenseless against these Gulf state cities like Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Kuwait City, Manama and Bahrain, Doha and Qatar. You have these major cities that are sitting vulnerable. They have, power production plants. They have desalination plants, which they are completely dependent on for fresh water. It is August where it gets 120. Sometimes I've been in Kuwait where it's 130, mid-130s. It's just, it's difficult to explain. It's not that air conditioning is, oh, that's nice. Air conditioning is a survival thing. If you don't have air conditioning in that area, you can quickly die just because of the heat. And it's you imagine with a lack of fresh water and no electricity to run air conditioning, that you would have mass casualties alone, not to mention the fact you don't have any fresh water. They're going to have to talk about an evacuation. And every time I look at that possibility, my mind just tends to spin because I'm trying to figure out how would you evacuate that many people? Where would they go? Where would they go to get fresh water? Where would they go? Where would they evacuate to that wouldn't be vulnerable to attack by the Iranians? So there is a lot of reasons why, and a lot of it's tied to air defense capabilities or the lack thereof, that drive a lot of that. It's not necessarily always a dominant decision, but it is definitely a major consideration, if not the dominant consideration, of why we're doing what we're doing there. All right. Now, switch gears here. I'm going to move. It's also changing our thinking on Ukraine. Now, President Zelensky of Ukraine recently met with President Trump. They talked about a lot of things. Obviously, this is not the first meeting they've had, and one of the things that comes up is would love to get more Patriot missiles. There was a tentative offer to allow licensing for Patriot missile production. It was going to be a less expensive version that would be producing Ukraine. Ukrainians are very good at taking whatever we give them in terms of designs and everything, and then put it into production there. So, but even then, that would have taken at least a year or so to get those missiles out. So it wasn't going to be a real quick term solution. That's a year where they're going to keep getting pummeled by Russian missiles. So that was still a problem. And then once they got into it, the president came out and said, well, I'm not sure if we're going to do that. I don't know all the politics there, but I will tell you this, that certainly if I was in the defense contracting world, working with these missiles, and I was in, I was in the intelligence community for a long time, I might look at this stuff and say, look, there's stuff that we may not want to share with them on these missiles, and it's strictly on security concerns. It's like, nobody's saying that the Ukrainians are going to share that information, but the Ukrainians are being targeted by the Russians and the Chinese, and the fear is that what is happening there could get out. That it could get leaked or it could be stolen, if you will, by an adversary intelligence service. And some crown jewel secrets that we have in terms of technology could be taken by them, and they could re-engineer stuff and, you know, literally neutralize that operational and tactical advantage we have with these missiles. So there's a lot of reasons why the president may have been forced to backtrack from what he said, but that still leaves Ukraine at a real deficit. Now, they have a lot of air defense missiles. They have a lot of air defense systems. They have a lot of Patriot systems. They just don't have enough missiles for those systems. So a lot of systems are basically sitting idle. They can track what's coming in, but they can't launch anything. Now, the Germans produce a thing called Iris-T, very, very capable air defense missile for going, anti-missile, as they like to say. And then the SAMP-T, which is surface-to-air missile platform / terrain that the French produce, is also very capable. My understanding is the Ukrainians have both of these. Again, limited production within these countries. They produce these missiles. They've been sharing these missiles, but they don't have this massive production line where they can just send missiles ad infinitum to support the Ukrainians. You know, maybe they're going to ramp up. We're ramping up, obviously, as I mentioned. So hopefully some missiles out there. But, you know, for the U.S., we have to backfill our requirements. And for the Germans and for the French and for other European states, they're also looking at increasing requirements that they have for dealing with threats from Russia. So that's a big problem that everybody has. Both these systems are very capable, but again, they don't have a lot of extra missiles sitting around. Hence, Ukraine has an immediate problem. It needs to do something about all these Russian missiles are coming in and pummeling Kyiv and other major Ukrainian cities across the country, and soon to be joined by some North Korean missiles that are coming in as part of a plus-up for North Korea. So there's been a little bit of discussion about how this can be addressed. One of the things they asked for was to, Zelensky asked President Trump to ask Elon Musk to allow them to use Starlink downlink feature over Russian territory. Now, former defense minister, when he was defense minister, Fedorov of Ukraine, had a very, very close relationship. He was a primary liaison between Elon Musk and his company and Ukraine, and was part of the impetus for getting, Starlink to turn off its feeds that the Russians are using to target Ukraine. Very successful thing. Has had tremendous effect on the battlefield by essentially blocking the Russians from being able to use those Starlink downlink. But the Starlink feeds like that allow for very precise targeting, precision targeting of drones and missiles is turned off over Russia entirely. And what Zelensky's asking about is, can you turn that on? It's going to require some software changes and some other things in order to make it happen. But can you turn that on so that their munitions and, the Ukrainians have drones with loitering capability. In other words, they can hang around out there for a while until they find a target to hit and then go in and hit it. Also, they have some very effective Flamingo cruise missiles, so effective that they can now fly under 100 feet during their trip, which means the Russians have a very, very difficult, if not impossible, time trying to intercept those cruise missiles. Anyway, these are things that Starlink capability could potentially provide tremendous value to the Ukrainians in able to hit the launcher systems of these Russian missiles, particularly the mobile launcher systems, which, hence the term mobile, they move around. So these are very time-sensitive data points in terms of where they are at any given time. And that's where Starlink could be absolutely invaluable in assisting in that effort. And we'll see if that happens. That's something that could actually be put into effect within a relatively short period of time, within weeks, not years or a year. So that's something that could be done in taking out those launcher systems, which, keep in mind, all those North Korean things coming in, those are all mobile launcher systems, but taking out those launcher systems would vastly diminish the amount of missiles coming in. The other thing that the Ukrainians do at the same time, they have a variety of intermediate and deep strike missions. They are causing tremendous problems for Russia in terms of resupplying the lines. They have just shut down a lot of the logistics, a lot of the logistics capability that Russia has on the front lines. They have, logistically speaking, turned a peninsula of Crimea, the crown jewel of Russian possessions in Ukraine. They've turned that crown jewel into the Achilles heel because they can't resupply. Anything on Crimea is susceptible to attack at any given time. They've gone after ships in the Sea of Azov, of course, lots of ships in the Black Sea, Russian ships. And And with that, that has been a very effective tool in putting pressure on Russia. Then the deep strikes hitting refineries, manufacturing, production sites for missiles, drones, all sorts of stuff all around the country. More recently, hitting logistics nodes, dual-use things like the Wildberries, which is sort of like the Amazon of Russia, hitting all their facilities, which potentially over time could trigger a banking crisis and maybe even a banking collapse in the country because of how their debt is structured with Wildberries. Anyway, this is all putting phenomenal pressure on Putin. So they are playing a larger strategic game here, which is they're buying time to allow that pressure to accumulate. It's already been widely discussed that the elites are frustrated with Putin. They're frustrated with the war. And there's a lot of talk about what they might do. Now, Putin's got a very effective security service. And when they find somebody who might pose a threat, they have a tendency to have a sudden inner ear problem where they fall out of a window of a high-story building. That's supposed to be facetious, by the way, for anybody wondering what I'm talking about. But anyway, he tends to eliminate his potential rivals and threats on a regular basis. So that's a big issue that goes on there. Now, Putin fired Fedorov. Fedorov didn't get along with a lot of his senior generals. He fired Fedorov, and then he turned around and started firing senior generals to include his army chief of staff, brought in a younger crew. The current army chief or military chief of staff actually gets along with Fedorov personally. He always has. Fedorov is a tech guy. He's 35 years old, not military. Very different type of guy. He's philosophically just completely disagrees with the traditional Soviet style warfare model that he was seeing with a lot of the generals and in this more nimble tech oriented thing. There's a lot of protests to get Fedorov back in the defense minister position. Fedorov hasn't taken another position the government has offered, but he hasn't taken anything. So we'll see how this all plays out. And I would not rule out, although Zelensky's a little concerned, if he puts Fedorov back in there, politically speaking, he's putting Fedorov, it gives Fedorov a win politically. And there's been a lot of discussion that Fedorov could end up becoming the next president of Ukraine when martial law eventually ends and there's an election. And I'm sure Zelensky's track record has been when he sees somebody who looks like a potential rival like that, he tends to move them out of the way. Anyway, long story short, there's a lot going on there. So that's kind of what's happening with that. Now, hence, this is where we are now. We got years. It's going to take a long time to get these production rates back up. The reality is that we've had long periods. We talked about what happened with the war on terror, but we just weren't ramping up. We weren't looking at the next war. We weren't looking at drones like we should. Now we're catching up. It's taking a while, but we're catching up to this whole thing. And so there's a lot of things out there, you know, like directed energy weapons, lasers, if you want to, they're part of that whole thing. But these are just being deployed. They're not out there in mass numbers. They have tremendous potential. You know, instead of spending millions to zap a drone, you can spend pennies to zap a drone, potentially with a laser. But they're just not out there yet. And it's going to take a while to get these out there and get these fully fielded and work out all the doctrinal stuff around them to make them more effective, especially with, you know, massive drone attacks, drone swarms is a term that they use. And how will that work with directed energy weapons? So there's a lot of discussion about what's going to have to happen there. And that's going to take a while to get that out there, right? So initially, we're paying for the fact we didn't ramp up production for a long time. We let our defense industrial base wane, and that's not just one administration. You know, the Trump administration now is kind of ramping up, but we've had prior administrations that kind of sat there, and I will say that the Biden administration probably should have done a full court press, but politically probably felt constrained because of all the politics of the amount of aid that we're sending over to Ukraine. Long story short, we probably should have been ramping this up going well before that. If you want to go back into the first Trump administration, our first Trump term, into the Obama-Trump term, there were just a lot of things that need to get done that just didn't get done. And now we're having to try and catch up with that. And so that's where we are. Hence for Ukraine, the Starlink ask, it's going to be a difficult one. It definitely puts the Starlink satellite system in the crosshairs of Russia. Russia has been developing anti-satellite capabilities. China has been developing anti-satellite capabilities. Something like this, the fear would be that we might cross that threshold where Russia would say, look, we're losing our advantage. You know, for Putin, he might get so desperate, say, I'm going to lose the war in Ukraine if they wipe out my launchers, my mobile launcher systems, and do something very precipitous, dangerous, where he might go after Starlink system directly. that would be a big concern for Elon Musk. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it is a big ask. But I think that is probably, of all the options out there, that may be one of the better ones I've heard in order to do that. I've also heard another one, which I think also is something they can implement in weeks, which might help as well. So things to consider. That's a lot of data on missiles. The reason I mention it is because I get a lot of feedback. People are saying, what is going on with this? Give me the details. You know, get into the math. Tell me what the problem is. Tell me what the implications are. That's why I felt I needed to talk about this. It's been numerous interviews that I've had over the last couple, 3 weeks where we've talked about this stuff, but I just want to take a chance to really dig into it much more and kind of lay it out there in ways that everybody can kind of understand where we are. Hey, thanks for listening to Strat. Also, please go to stratpodcast.com. You can also go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kipfer TV, where you can see all these different, I try to embed as many of these news interviews that I do. You can also go to the corporate website for Global Risk Intelligence Planning, gripsa.com. And if you want to hear a lot more about what's happening around the world, have a webinar coming up on August 18th, a global threat update, a world of wars. And if you go to Los Angeles Center Guard website, you can register for this. You have a few hours, sit down, and I'm going to really go all around the world and look at a number of different threats, well beyond just ballistic missiles and stuff like that. And that again is on Thursday, August 18th. So thanks for listening to Strat. Hope you tune into the next one.
Strategic Risk Assessment Talk is presented by the Mutual Broadcasting System. Stay informed on the matters we discuss by visiting stratpodcast.com and other sites mentioned by Hal Kipfer. You may interact with the show through our website at stratpodcast.com or through our Facebook social media site. Thank you for joining us.